Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Jay North. He is an organic farmer, writer and author, and practitioner in healing arts. And we're going to talk about his book, which he refers to as a spirit talk, called Open Spaces. And it's about his life with a Blackfeet elder from Northwest Montana. And the Blackfeet Elder is, in fact, Leonard Jay, a mountain chief. Right, so welcome to the program, Jay.
Thank you, Michael.
Did I get that right about the mountain chief?
Yes, Leonard Jay, mountain chief. Long-term name in terms of the generations on the Blackfeet land, in particularly Montana. There's even a mountain named after his great-grandfather called Chief Mountain. Great big tall peak, I think, somewhere around 13,000 feet high. One of our sacred mountains on the res.
Okay, now the little I do know about your sort of early days with this particular subject is that you had your first encounter in 1999. Now, how did that come about, and how was it, in fact, that you evidently spent quite a lot of time with the Leonard Jay Mountain Chief?
Yeah. Well, we refer to our meeting, the day that we met, and shortly after, we refer to our meeting as what we call an intentional accident. And that is
yes.
Where you may intend something to happen, and without looking for it, it accidentally does happen. And Leonard, I saw Leonard approaching a gallery I owned in Kalispell, Montana, which is on the west side of the Divide, the Great Continental Divide, small town, very small shop. And there's a large picture window in front, and I saw two Native people drive up in front, and they were getting out of their vehicle. And Leonard's rather tall and really handsome man. And something occurred to me that he was an important figure to the tribe. So I rushed to put together a bundle, what we refer to as a medicine bundle or a gift bundle, to present him with when he walked through the door. So I sort of scurried around the shop, and I found sage, sweetgrass, turquoise, some beads, tobacco, and an old piece of sort of Western cloth I had, and wrapped the bundle. When he walked through the door, I handed it to him. And we shook hands, and we had our first conversation that day that lasted about 3 hours.
Gosh.
And at the end of the conversation, he said, you and I are to be good friends of long standing. And he invited me out to his place, and my first time out to his place was that very weekend.
Well, I mean, did you feel that it was someone that you perhaps instinctively already knew, whether that was from any past life or whatever?
Eventually we talked about the varied likelihood that we've known each other in past lives in various places on the planet, and that we came together in a very free sort of spirit, in terms of there was no karma to work out, so to speak, between us. But we came together in friendship and unity, and I believe very much part of it was for him to deliver the messages that he did in the book that I wrote. It's the full title is Open Spaces, My Life with Leonard Jay Mountain Chief, Blackfeet Elder from Northwest Montana, which is a long title, but I wanted to describe adequately who he is.
Yes, indeed. must be one of the longest titles going, that one, I would think. Now, I gather that the book is made up of 28 stories. So how did you get those stories? I mean, did you have a lot of contact with him over a period of years and sort of wrote it up and then made it into stories?
Yes, I had constant contact with Leonard for about 9 years until his death in 99. We met in 1990. And a lot of the sort of messages that he conveyed to me He asked me to share with people one day, and some of them we feel are of particular importance in terms of mankind's survival on planet Earth and learning to come together in unity and love and figuring out a way to get along and recognizing our differences, but we can still live in unity. Some of them had very much a direct response to visions Leonard had in terms of our safety and continuum as a race species on planet Earth. And he particularly had fear that nuclear could one day end this place.
Right. When did he sort of have that vision? How long ago?
I recollect 1991 or 1992.
Right. Was that when he told you that we as human beings either change or lose planet Earth? Because he says something to the effect that the children will have no place to run and play.
Exactly. Exactly. He often repeated that in a lot of his sort of stories and sharing in terms of people learning to get along, losing and dropping the need for violent acts against one another, that we come to recognize our oneness in spirit and that we are very much alike. We may be different in skin color, we may be different in religious beliefs or creeds or faith, but the fact is that we are all one in spirit. And Leonard would say, if you cut me, I will bleed. And you will see, if I cut you, you will bleed. We are the same. We are one.
Right. Yes.
And so he often worked to spread the message of nonviolence. I'll tell you about there were so many events that I could relate to today. There was one particular, in 1993, the Flathead area, which includes Kalispell and several other towns on the west side of the mountain. The Kalispell Indians are a separate tribe, also referred to as Flatheads. Music festival happens every year over in the Flathead County in June, so a month-long festival, and every day there's a different venue in some part of the county. Leonard was preparing to play. He was actually a world-class fiddle player. He won 3 championships in Nashville, Tennessee, in the United States because of his craft with the violin. And my wife and I at the time, we were artisans, and we really enjoyed setting up an environmental atmosphere to make people feel comfortable at home and free within our space, and we tend to attract a lot of people to our camp. And where we were camped, and Leonard was camped, was a week-long period of people coming and going from our camp. Leonard played at his venue, not actually right there where we were camped, at a huge park. And afterwards, big festival, and people came to our camp to thank him for his music and greet him and meet him and this sort of thing. And Leonard and I stayed up. We spoke most of the evening. And long about 5 o'clock in the morning, 2 couples, man and woman each, approached the camp. And mostly everybody was asleep in this great big wall tent we had put up with carpets and materials and things from all over the world. And we sat in a small informal circle and had an absolutely beautiful, almost romantic conversation in terms of where we've been, what we've done, and some of us being gypsies, where we might be off to next. And the way that the informal conversation went was that each person in the group had an opportunity to speak and to speak from the heart and say exactly what was on their mind and in their heart. And afterwards, Leonard and I went out of the tent for a while, and we ended up having breakfast and spending the day together. But I had said to Leonard, I said, my God, you know, it was such a beautiful morning with these people showing up before light and an incredibly enchanting conversation. And he replied, yes, we had a fine way of counsel. And at the time, I didn't know what he was referring to. I said, could you tell me what that means, please? And in the old days, when the people would gather and they had either a particular subject they wanted to cover, like war or peace or hunting buffalo or whatever it may be, they would pass a stone or pass a rock, and each person that held the rock could speak basically for as long as they want to and say anything they wanted to on the subject. He said we had a fine way of counsel. We didn't have the stone physically with us, but each person in the group got to hold the stone and speak directly from the heart. If everyone would apply this form of communication worldwide, there would be no more wars. And I agreed.
Absolutely, yes. Was that something they used to do quite frequently then, or are these things done on the spur of the moment?
Now, since my relationship with Leonard and my deep involvement with him and with Spirit, holding council, doing ceremony, particularly Native prayer work, what we refer to as lodge, or many people in the United States refer to as sweat lodge, yes, it happens frequently these days. And, of course, now with Leonard, just in spirit.
Right. So, talking of things like that, I notice you have spoken with him about the sun dance, the ghost dance, and the grass dance. Are they all dances with sort of a spiritual essence to them? I mean, perhaps you could tell us about them.
Yes, absolutely. Each one has a spiritual essence. And always during the various festivals or dances, and these are not what we refer to as powwows. Powwows are more or less open to anyone that wants to come. They're for entertainment. There's things bought and sold, and there's none of that sort of thing at the ceremonial events like ghost dance and what have you. And grass dance, particularly at harvest time in September, when the people gather under, a huge open field not too far from the Sweetgrass Mountains. The Sweetgrass Mountains actually produce a very, very long, tall, very sweet-smelling grass that, when it's dried, is braided and traded or given away. And grass dance is a time to come together to give purely thanksgiving for everything that you have. And the elders will stand and speak. Now, since the groups are rather large now at the events, oftentimes a small sort of amplifier is used so everybody can hear. Particularly on the east side of Montana, the wind blows like crazy, so it makes it difficult to hear, sometimes even with a small amplifier. And Leonard's time came to speak, and he stood and gave praises and thanksgiving to the Creator for this place, praise and thanksgiving for our brothers and sisters, bless the new arrivals, through the mothers to the reservation, and spoke in terms of everything we are blessed with without any attention or focus given on lack whatsoever. As you may know, many indigenous tribes of the United States and South America and elsewhere tend mostly to live in poverty, really poor. But in Thanksgiving and the festival, there's never any focus or conversation given to the poverty state. It's Thanksgiving for our dwelling, for our family, for the food that we had to eat today, for the money that we have in our pocket, and the gas we have in our tanks, and give praise and thanksgiving for the gift that we are given. And it's Great Spirit, Grandfather Son, sees fit to give us more. We are in deep, deep gratitude. But we are in deep gratitude every day for our lives. Mm-hmm. And that's what grass dance is about. The dances that go on are in praise and in thanksgiving.
Right. So is the ghost dance something to do with those who have already passed over?
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't only occur at ghost dance because we always call in the spirits. There was actually a period of time, I believe in 18, well, I can't remember exactly when, I think it was 1864 or 65, the United States Army decided to outlaw the grass dance for all tribes throughout the United States. It was actually a fear-based law that if the Indians were able to call back their spirits and the strength of their spirits, it would make it harder for the army to defeat the Indians. So they actually outlawed it. It's still on the books. It's actually still against the law, but it's just not enforced.
Well, how weird. I've never heard of that one before. So were you made somewhere along the line, something in the way of an honorary member, and did you actually take part in the dances yourself?
Yes, I'm a dancer. I dance the friendship dance. There's several various types of animal dances, the eagle dance, the bear dance, the mud dance. Those really, really require extraordinary amount of practice and proficiency, so I never do them in front of anybody.
Right. I gather from one of your chapters that is called Come Into Sacred Ceremony that you must have had some personal experience of that one.
Well, yes, I mean, several various types of ceremony in terms of reaching out to spirit, and allowing spirit in, reaching out to various entities and deities that the tribe holds as sacred, pipe ceremonies, sweat ceremonies, dance ceremonies, and they are all ceremonies that could be akin to sort of a form of meditation that you could possibly relate to Buddhist meditation or Hindu meditation or a New Age philosophy, going deep. And the deeper one is able to go in trance and connect with spirit and ultimately with the great spirit and come into the unfoldment of the soul. That's basically the whole purpose of what we're doing here.
Right. So I guess a lot of people, like myself, have heard of the sweat lodges, but you've referred to it as a sacred sweat lodge. So what actually happened inside them?
Well, they're sacred because everything on Earth is sacred. We believe we come from the Earth. We return to the Earth. The Earth we walk on is sacred. The tobacco we may smoke is sacred. The pipe we smoke through is sacred. The animals that appear to us are sacred and speak to us, they're sacred. In a sweat lodge, anything can happen, and miracles happen regularly. And if you were to experience one, you perhaps would experience your own miracle. And I would encourage your listeners, if they have an opportunity to, wherever they are, if they happen to have an intentional accident where they're invited to lodge, I would encourage one to go. I would give this bit of a preface in terms of a warning. They're not, an eagle is just flying overhead, by the way. A golden eagle just flew right over me.
Really?
Yes.
That's a good omen, isn't it?
Yes. Now, I've got to yell something. Fly high, use wisdom. I won't scream it because we're on the phone.
That's nice.
Sweat lodge. So, sweat lodge will go on for a multitude of purposes. Community sweat. Just to come together and pray, to sing and chant and praise Great Spirit. Healing sweat, so if there's a mental or physical disability one wishes to overcome and wants to connect with Spirit in terms of asking for a healing, there's always a leader of the lodge. They're often called the person who pours. They pour the water or they lead the lodge, but it's the person who pours that leads the lodge.
Right.
There'll be several people in the lodge. Well, there could be two or they could be 50. Depends on the size of the lodge and what the purpose is. There are separate sweats that just men participate in. There are just sweats that only women participate in. Women, what's referred to as crossing the line, that's coming close to the lodge area, when they're on their menstrual cycle, they're not permitted to cross the line.
Mm.
In any case, there can be occasionally, and of course I have experienced it, and I've seen it several times myself, I've seen absolutely miraculous healings occur in lodge. And we believe that the poor, the shaman, has the power to heal. He has direct contact with spirit, through spirit. He can heal maladies, deformities, diseases, and this sort of thing.
Mm.
And so occasionally, what, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, no, carry on, Jay.
Thank you.
You hadn't finished.
I lived with an Englishman for a couple of years, a rather famous musician, Malcolm Watson. I love how you people talk.
Right.
Occasionally, there'll be something to ingest in terms of herbs that may be used. They're normally always regional herbs that the shaman feels could be of some benefit. For instance, mugwort for one purpose, or willow bark, or chaparral, or echinacea, or something that shaman will generally reach in his medicine bag and pull out, and they'll say, here, eat these, or here, drink this. And you sort of say, okay. And it is a matter of trust, by the way, and you drink it, or you ingest
right.
it. Or
right, no.
other times, other ways of ingesting the medicine.
Right. Now, you've spoken about healing. What is the story behind the chapter that you've called He Came and I'm Healed?
I was diagnosed with a liver problem, and it was a scary one, and I knew I was going to have to give it some attention in one fashion or another. I don't happen to be a big believer in Western medicine, although I, at the time, supposed that I may have succumbed to it if needed, and it was troublesome. I was a bit worried, and in his incredible ability to observe, Leonard said, okay, what's going on? And I said, well, I've got a malady I'm a little worried about. And he just sort of indicated it's a good day for lodge or a good day to do a sweat. And I said, yes, it would probably be a good day. And during sweat, on the chanting, Leonard, with his hand on my knee, asked me to go deep and release what I needed to release most. And the lodge itself, they go on for a very long period of time. Lodge tends to be a very dark, very hot atmosphere. The door only opens to replace fresh rocks, hot rocks coming in. There's usually about 7 passed in at a time, up to 28, and in some cases 48 rocks. So the rocks will continue to be passed in, and we're chanting, and we're praying, and we're singing. And I felt a powerful connection with spirit that was almost overwhelming in terms of feeling on my body and vibration through my hands and into my stomach region, and particularly the area of my liver. Slightly painful for a period of time, but there was no blood as akin to surgery or anything like that. But I definitely felt the pressure. And somehow felt released and relieved after lodge. We went out and cooled off and had a short conversation, and Leonard said, good day for a healing. I went back to the medical people and had new tests done, and what was apparently there was no longer there. It was gone completely. It was a tumor.
Wow.
And it had disappeared. And I don't relate these stories lightly, so I'm speaking from the heart.
Right. So are you saying that you didn't know you had tumor?
I suspected I had the tumor, and I was having a bit of pain in the liver region. And, well, at first I thought it was a kidney stone, and no, it wasn't a kidney stone. It turned out to be a tumor in what they call ultrasound examination and CAT scan. And, you know, go see a surgeon and oncologist and this and that. And I said, well, you know, I'm probably not going to go through any of that. I'm going to do my own way and see how things turn out. I work extensively with herbs myself. I have a rather extensive background in healing with food and with herbs and various magic bullet formulas. It's another one of my books I wrote, as a matter of fact. It's called Miracles in the Kitchen. In any case, I tend to put my faith in these sort of natural healing agents, everything from green juicing to spirit water. So I put my faith in where my faith belongs, in spirit, and I was healed. Are you with me?
Yes, indeed, yes. Yes, carry on.
Well, I'm done with that for the most part. So that there's lodge for lots of purposes. People come with whatever they come with. I've seen things occur in lodge that I'm sworn not to talk about, so I won't. But miracles do tend to occur, as in a tumor being gone from my liver.
Right. Right, Jay, let's talk a little about some of the, shall we say, the sayings of Leonard. You have a chapter which I guess originates from something he's spoken about when he said, speak with intention. So what did he mean?
That happened specifically with the group that I spoke about earlier, inside the tent where we held the rock and without holding the rock and had a very beautiful conversation. And what that has to do with, in the native way and in all ways of communication that could be or should be, is always speak with intention and listen intently. Allow your partner to say whatever it is they have to say that's in their mind, on their mind or in their heart, and you become the listener. And then when it's your turn to become the speaker, speak with intention and expect that you will be listened to intently.
Right.
And always speak from the heart. Never fear it. Never give up all strength and power, and always speak from the heart.
Fine. That sounds very, very good advice. What were Leonard's thoughts on the environment?
Leonard's thoughts on the environment and mine shared, combined, came actually from an incident. There's, I think, three chapters in the book that cover this particular incident. And we were over at a public powwow just outside of Browning. It's sort of the main town on the reservation. There's several small towns all around. The district that Leonard lived in is called Heart Butte. The Army called it Old Agency when they settled the natives in this particular spot. But natives from all around the region will come for a powwow. And oftentimes during powwow, or just after powwow, that particular one was, my brain just had, I'm sorry, I'm having a brain fart. It'll come back to me. Sundance. Sundance was just getting ready to get kicked off. It was a region just above where we'd been camped. Leonard and I went out for a drive around the res, and he said, I want to take you over and show you something, somebody I want you to meet. And we drove, and we got to what they call the house, the longhouse where the old people live. It's akin to a senior living facility for people that are old and generally disabled. Sometimes there isn't family to care for the old folks, and sometimes they just can't. So they have a facility where old people can stay. We drove up a very long, kind of windy drive, and when we entered the property on the drive, I could see a very old woman sitting in a wheelchair in front of the facility. And she was crusty. I mean, she's really wrinkled and really old and white, silver hair. And, you know, Leonard took notice of my noticing her. He said, "That's who I want you to meet." And we got out of the truck and we approached, we walked up, and we were probably, I would say, about 10 or 15 yards away from her. She was so cute. She lifted her hand and pointed her finger at me and started to laugh. Her name is Agnes, and she likes to laugh a lot.
Yeah.
And Agnes said, "I know why you're here." And I said, "Oh?" I said, "Well, okay, if you know more than I do, perhaps you'll share with me what I'm doing here."
Mm.
She said, "You've come to hear the words of White Buffalo speaks. He's strong and he's powerful. He's one of the most important deities, entities to the tribe, has direct connection with Great Spirit, similar to Babaji in Hindu. White Buffalo speaks for a Great Spirit and also has connection to our mother, the Earth." She took hold of my wrist and had me squat down next to her. She leaned back in her chair, took a deep breath, and the voice that came out of her was a man's voice.
Mm.
And she spoke a native language, and it was the first time in my experience that I understood in this lifetime native language, clearly and distinctly what the communication was she was having with White Buffalo Speaks.
Right.
She continued speaking the words of White Buffalo Speaks for about, I would say, 20 minutes or maybe longer. The vibration from her hand to my wrist and to my arm to my body was overwhelming. The energy that filled my body was unfamiliar. It made me dizzy, shaky, weak, disoriented. And she gifted me a piece of native artifact I still have to this day, bear medicine. And she said, "I gift you White Buffalo Speaks. He's always with you whenever you need him. He's right by your side. And just draw your attention and ask him to speak," which I do often to this day, with or without other people present. And we bid farewell, and we went up to this Kiowa Creek area where Sundance was to be held. It was already about 100, 200 old pickup trucks parked on the hill, and the drumming was already going, and the singing was already going. Women generally host the Sundance. They'll put it on. They'll provide the feast, and they'll orchestrate everything that needs to be put together for the period, the four-day festival. And generally, the young man or men that wish to return or become men will allow themselves to be pierced in the chest or in the back with either bear claw or deer bone or buffalo bone. It actually cuts through the skin, and they're either hung from a tree or they drag buffalo skulls or the sort of thing until the meat of their flesh breaks and they're set free. The men will fast, chant, and pray for several hours. There's rather excitable dancing going on the entire time. They're feasting, except for the men that participate in the Sundance to be pierced. They don't eat until it's done, and they eat generously. And the people break into small groups and have conversations, sometimes about family, sometimes about their homestead, problems, whatever they feel they need to talk about. I broke into a small group with Leonard of about 20 people, men and women, and we sat in a small circle. And Leonard said, "So, Jay, what did White Buffalo Speaks have to say?" And it brought tears to my eyes immediately. I leaned back and I took a deep breath, and I asked for White Buffalo's presence to come and speak the words he spoke earlier with Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
And he related that he does not understand, and Mother Earth does not understand. We have so much, and we respect so little. We are given everything without deep gratitude. We have this earth and potentially clean air and clean water. Why do you pollute me so? What makes you think these broken beer bottles and cans belong in my forest? And why do you carve in my trees? Why do you dump oil and fluids into my streams when I give you clear water to drink? I do not understand. Why do you pollute the air so thick that the children are unable to breathe? I do not understand. What is taking them so long to wake up and to realize this is the only place to dance to the dumb song? When will they love me as I love them? I give them everything, and I ask so little in return except for their respect. Why do they set off bombs in the oceans that kill the great fishes? Why do they increasingly dump more and more waste into the holes of the earth that I gave them? When will they wake up and when will they understand? And I opened my eyes, and I was greeted with smiles and understanding and agreement that we need to stop polluting this place. And so he asked Leonard's view on the environment. There you have it. That we are killing the planet that we're living on and living in disrespect for it. Now, there are several groups. I know there's thousands of internet sites in terms of taking care of the environment, protecting the environment, and people doing good jobs on Earth Day cleaning up their parks and streams and rivers. And influencing commercial big business worldwide in India and in Europe and in South America to stop polluting the land. You know, it's an amazing thing, even today in the United States in agricultural practices, there are over a dozen agricultural products that have been made illegal in the United States to grow with. So what does Monsanto do? They sell to the countries where it's not illegal, grow the vegetables and fruits and berries with chemicals that have been made illegal in the United States, and then export the food all over the world with it tainted by the same chemicals. When will they learn? When will they wake up? But for greed and money, they have no respect.
Right.
So that's Leonard's view on the environment.
Well, I suppose, a summary of a lot of people's thoughts at the moment, and I hope we do wake up. Does that relate to the chapter that you call A Clear Mountain Morning of Nuclear Vision? Does that relate?
Clear Mountain Morning of Nuclear Vision specifically has to do with nuclear plants creating nuclear energy and nuclear bombs. Leonard called one morning, it was February, the dead of winter in Montana, 8 o'clock in the morning, and said, come over quick. And I said, Leonard, it's been snowing. It's freezing out. Coming over the pass is going to be practically impossible. Can you tell me over the phone what it is you want to impart? And he said, no, it's essentially you come now.
Right.
And Pammy, my wife, was just waking up. She said, that was Leonard. And I said, yes, it was. He wants me to come over right now. And he says, I'll fix you some breakfast. And I said, Pammy, the snow up on the pass is going to be 4 feet deep. And she said, you get ready to go, I'll pack you a lunch. So I called him back and told him I'd be on my way over, it was a miserable drive, which is normally about a 2.5 to 3 hour drive over the mountain. Took, I think, around 8 hours or more because it was just such slow going. Even the chains had a tough time making it over the mountain. And so I got there around 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and Leonard, in his jovial manner, kicked the door open and said, took a while to get here, did it? I thought you were going to camp up on the mountain. I said, funny, Leonard. What's to eat? And he kicked the door open again and said, well, let's see what we have for late arrival. And I said, Leonard, please, what is so important you wanted me to come now today? And he said, life, my boy, life. We'll talk in the morning. And I was tired. We had a nice moose stew for dinner, a cup of coffee, and went to bed. Early in the morning, it had stopped snowing. The sun was out brighter than I've ever seen it before, shining on the Lewis and Clark Mountain Range and the Glacier National Peaks above. And Leonard went out. We went out, and he threw a couple of deerskin rugs on the ground, and we sat in the snow and freezing cold weather. And it came to him the night before in a vision that even this place, referring to the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, would one day no longer be here. And very clearly, he saw mass destruction of nuclear facilities all over the globe. He had a prediction for us in terms of a date that this could happen, and the only way to stop it is by people communicating about it. He has said that your news people will no longer talk about or write about it because it is not news. Your teachers won't speak about it because their hands are tied. Your Congress people will do nothing about it because their pockets are lined with the gold that it produces. But it is the most dangerous, evil thing in existence on the planet today. And that to ensure our survival, it must be peacefully disassembled. And he rushed me, urged me to communicate that message with as many people as I could worldwide. In that version, that chapter was written in an article version, and it had been printed several hundred times in sort of alternative newspapers under what we refer to in the United States as underground press. And I've had the opportunity to speak about it several hundred times. The importance to this day in 2012 and the very likely changes that are happening since 2010, 2011, into 2012, and possibly beyond, if we find a way as a race species to come together to survive, we will. Can nuclear end this place? Certainly it can, yes. I mean, we see what happened in Japan just a couple of years ago or last year, and has the likelihood that it could happen again on the California coast or North Carolina or anywhere. Germany, I think it was just towards the end of last year, announced that they were voluntarily dismantling all of their nuclear facilities. And this has to occur everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think it is recognized that nuclear devices are an absolute danger to the human race, but I suppose they will argue that they cannot find any alternative energy source to replace it. What would you say to that one?
That's an absolute joke. Free energy is a reality. It's been developed. It's real. It's usable. Sun energy happens every day. Oceanic energy, it happens every day. Magnetic energy happens every day. The idea that nuclear energy is a necessity is an antiquated agreement as oral surgery. There's no longer need for oral surgery. There's no longer need to cut open a body. Bodies can be healed definitely otherwise, either through food or energy or prayer. The idea that this is a safe, sound measure of providing energy to people's homes and businesses is ridiculous. It's unsafe, and it isn't efficient, and the only thing it does is line the power company's pockets with money. And that's basically what it's always been about.
Yes.
It's always about money and greed and power.
Yes, well, certainly go along with you on that one. And yes, I'm aware that for some years now, people have been discovering and inventing free energy devices. But of course, the oil industry doesn't really want to see them come onto the market. So they get pushed aside, not allowed to develop.
Yes, they get pushed aside, but now with the advent of the Internet, there's just no way to hide it anymore. Anybody that knows how to type can find this, all of this information.
Yes, I agree with you on that one. What did Leonard have to say about the family?
Leonard had a view about family very similar to mankind, is that you and I are Egyptian brothers and sisters, our Chilean brothers and sisters, our Hawaiian brothers and sisters are all one big family. And when we come to recognize that, Michael, have you ever held a baby in your arms and just felt amazing love for the child?
Indeed, yes, I have. I've had two sons, yes. Yes, indeed.
That love that you felt for your two sons when you held them, that energy that you felt from them, and the energy that you gave to them, if we take that same energy, that same concept, that same feeling, and transmute that to all of mankind as one family, as one tribe, that's how Leonard felt about family.
That's a very clever way of indicating what he means. Yes, I like that one. So, did Leonard look ahead to this actual period of time and make any comment how he thought the future would work out?
Leonard was a jovial man. He was optimistic. He was reverent. But he had his doubts. I'll relate a story about a young man, school age, high school age, who out of rage, for no apparent reason whatsoever, beat one of the teachers with a skateboard.
Gosh.
And with that kind of rage in a person's heart or mind and the ability to sort of do that activity, raised doubt in Leonard's optimism for our future. And will mankind wake up as a race species soon enough to save himself? There's another tribe in the United States known as the Hopi people that came from the Anasazi. The Hopi, the Navajo, and the Zuni were all one tribe, the Anasazi at one time. The Hopi being very, very peaceful people, like the Chumash, where I live now in California, have a very, very simple principle to life, existence, and continuum. And that is, live a simple life, plant a seed, speak kind, loving words to your plant as you would a child, save the world. Leonard said it is through this principle that we will go on as a species when man adopts simplicity and love for life. And without it, we won't. And the way I see it now, and I think the way Leonard saw it towards the end of his life, we're on a teeter-totter. And it's 50-50. We can go either way. We can cause this place to continue, or we can destroy it. You can never destroy life. Leonard said that himself. You can never destroy life. We'll come back as ants and start over when the planet's inhabitable. Do we want to evolve again, or do we want to take this opportunity at the threshold of man's experience to evolve into our oneness with great spirit that we truly are? Do we want to take the opportunity?
Right. Yes, I can definitely go along with that. Now, we're not too near the end of the program yet, Jay, but it might be a good time for you to take an opportunity to tell us where your book can be obtained from.
Oh, thank you for asking. I almost forgot that part. My books are available on various websites. My own is OneGlobePress.com, spelled out OneGlobePress.com. Open Spaces is the first book on top of the bunch. I've written, I think, about 20 books or so. Open Spaces is my favorite, my personal favorite, and my desire to communicate Leonard's messages, he'll always stay first up. So they just go to the site, click on the book, click on Order Now, Please. And people have a choice. They, of course, they want hard copy. They receive hard copy. It comes in the mail. Usually printed within a day or two after the ordering, is print on demand style, and shipped to them. It costs a couple of dollars shipping extra, or PDF. Get a PDF file off the same website or another one of my websites where I specialize in the PDF formula format is goingorganic.com. That's G-O-I-N-G organic.com, all one word. And then Amazon and Barnes. I'm sorry.
Can you repeat that last address again, and I'll make a note of that one, Jay?
That one is goingorganic.com.
Goingorganic.com,
correct. People can order either PDF or hard copy off that site as well.
Right.
Just about all the books are up on that site as well, although they won't find Leonard at the top of that site because I haven't moved him up yet recently. But either site, they can... they can purchase one. Open Spaces, My Life with Leonard J. Mountain Chief.
Right. Now, we still have a few minutes left. Is there any aspect or any particular message in that book you would quickly like to relate that we might not have spoken about?
You know, the things that we have spoken about and covered, I hope, well, for your audience, I would conclude by saying that Leonard's optimism is that one day all people will wake up and come together as one tribe, that we'll come to recognize that, yes, we have differences, we have different ideas, we have different principles, we may study a different religion or be a member of a particular sect, it doesn't matter. We are one in spirit and one in tribe, and it's a good time to come together as one spirit and learn how to get along. Love one another. There is no higher purpose. Leonard spoke about the concept, the idea, and the word love being spoke about through the millenniums. And I asked him, well, what is it that bothers you most about this idea? And he said, I want them to get it.
Right, I'm going to have to stop you there, Jay.
Okay.
It's been very interesting to talk about your book. A bit more of an unusual subject, I would say, to most that I've discussed. So thank you very much for coming onto the program. I enjoyed
it. Thank you very much for having me, and I enjoyed being with you as well.
Thank you, Jay. Bless you.
Bye-bye.
Right, friends, yes, another interesting chat there. Next week I have Lamont Wood coming on. He's just written a book called Out of Place in Time and Space, which covers countless inventions, art and other items that appear in ancient paintings, books and other places. So that sounds interesting as well. So thank you for being with me today. and I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.